These are unprecedented times for college sports, to say the least. Over the last week, we have seen coronavirus outbreaks inside several college football teams, and yet the president of the NCAA remains hopeful we're going to have a college football season one way or another this fall.
What we do know for sure is that whatever occurs, it's going to be different. We're not going to be able to have football in the same way that we're accustomed to seeing it year in and year out.
That is NCAA President Mark Embert, and he is our guest on today's show. We covered a wide range of topics, including a potential adjusted schedule for college basketball, as well as the broader social awakening taking place among college athletes. I'm Seth Davis from The Athletic, and this is The Comeback, COVID-19 and the Return of Sports. On Tuesday, Boise State announced that it's shutting down all campus facilities for the remainder of the week because of 8 COVID-19 cases that were discovered. Spikes in coronavirus around the country are threatening the plans to resume college football this fall. We discuss that and much more with NCAA President Mark Emmert. Mark Emmert, thanks for being on the podcast. I can't imagine how many Zoom conference calls you have scheduled for today, but let me just go right to the question that everybody is asking. The NCAA started allowing voluntary workouts beginning on June the 1st. At that time, we seem to be moving steadily towards playing a college football season. Now we're seeing spikes around the country, on campuses, within college football teams of coronavirus, and people are becoming increasingly pessimistic there will even be a season. Are you one of those people who's becoming increasingly pessimistic that there's going to be a college football season?
Well, first of all, Seth, good to be with you too, even if it's electronically. Good to hear your voice and see you via Zoom. So, you know, I think that the situation is obviously very, very fluid, and everybody recognizes that. We recognized it going into the summer, the spring and summer, when the Division I Council gave the green light to schools bringing back students for voluntary workouts June 1. It was with the understanding that every school had to deal with whatever their circumstances were on the ground and have in place all the appropriate healthcare protocol. And schools are dealing with it very differently. Some came back right away. Some aren't back yet. Some may not come back. We don't know. We've already seen some Division III schools make announcements that they're not going to play sports at all this year. So, you know, we'll have to see where those go forward. The realities are that that the health conditions are changing and occurring highly variably. You look at one state, you see big pockets popping back up again. In others, it seems to be much less prevalent. And so we have no choice but to rely on each individual jurisdiction, whether it's a city, county, or state, to determine what's effective in that area. You know, North Dakota looks very different than Phoenix, Arizona right now. And so where you stand on this one today, whether you're optimistic or pessimistic, to a certain extent depends on where you sit in the country. And what we do know for sure is that whatever occurs, it's going to be different. We're not going to be able to have football in the same way that we're accustomed to seeing it year in and year out.
I mean, could this be headed towards a situation where, because of those varying statistics and outbreaks in various parts of the country, certain parts don't play, certain do play, certain conferences play, certain conferences don't play? We're all kind of assuming there's going to be a national formula here. And in a lot of ways, it appears that might not be the case.
Yeah, I'm assuming there won't be a national formula because, again, it looks so different everywhere in the country. If you think about what's going on with restaurants, it looks different in different parts of the country, as it should, because the incidence of the virus is so variable across the country. The same thing is going to apply to sports across the country. We are, in my opinion, very likely to see some conferences have different start dates as we get closer to it. Some conferences, as you know, are looking at whether they just want to play in conference competitors and not go outside the conference. It may well be the case, because of the huge geographic spread of conferences, that some conferences don't have all of their teams participating. You know, you've got conferences that literally cover the United States, and they may have different circumstances in the southern or northern part of a conference where they can't play a competitor within their conference. And we may well see circumstances where, as we get into the fall, because of virus outbreaks, that some school may have to may have to slow down or stop temporarily or even permanently. That's a long-winded way of saying there's a great deal of uncertainty in all of this, Seth, and we're going to have to be very, very flexible in the way we approach it. There's clearly going to be competitive advantage or disadvantage just depending upon the whimsy of where the virus is.
A lot of these decisions being made at the school level and the conference level, what is the NCAA's role in all of these decisions?
Yeah, just as we did with the return to summer conditioning and workouts, our job is to provide the best guidance and advice that we can to conferences and to schools. As you're aware, and your audience should know, the schedules for the regular season are all a function of the schools and the conferences. So the National Association, the NCAA, says, look, you can begin on this date and you can end on that date, but what goes on in between then is up to the conferences to schedule games and up to the individual schools to find opponents outside of the conference. So we're going to set and are in the midst of setting parameters around what should be the baselines for guidance on what a healthy competition looks like, what should be the testing protocols, what should be the social distancing protocols, what should be the general approach that's applied. And then schools are going to have to conform also to their local health officials and state health officials. So as you've seen, there are some cities right now that are still saying, we're not going to have big events of over 250 people outside in the fall. Well, if that's the protocol, that's about the minimum for hosting a football game. When you've got, you know, teams and coaches and everybody else there, you got about 250 people. Well, that means no audience, obviously, and they may even not allow that depending upon the local jurisdiction. So at the federal level, the association-wide level, we're going to set broad parameters. Conferences are setting narrower parameters. Schools will set even narrower parameters, all depending upon their circumstances.
I mean, look, I know there's no way to totally pin down this answer. You can't fault the guy for trying. But could we potentially basically at this point, if these trends continue, Mark, be looking at a scenario where there is no college football this fall?
I think sitting here this time of year, nobody can predict anything with certainty. And so therefore, you shouldn't rule anything out. I certainly think that sitting here today, there will be football in the fall. I think it will be different in many respects, whether it's the audiences in attendance or not in attendance, whether it's the nature of the schedule, whether it's the length of the season. You know, all of those things will be different. And certainly the protocol and the way the games are played and the healthcare that's surrounding that has got to be different. That must be different. I think, you know, again, today we are likely to have football. I certainly hope so. Most people hope so. But it's all going to come down to whether or not it can be done in a safe fashion. Every school, despite all the challenges out there, every school is trying very hard to make sure that this is about the health and well-being of the students.
And along those lines, the NCAA's Division I Council originally approved these small voluntary workouts on campus that were being allowed starting on June 1st. And again, we're seeing outbreaks on these various college campuses. Kansas State, Boise State just had to shut down their whole campus. Looking back, maybe, is it fair to say that was done too soon? Were they allowed back too soon?
I think it's a little hard to second guess that one, to be honest. If they were, let's say the date had been July 1 instead of June 1, would students have been bringing back more or less cases of COVID-19 July 1 versus June 1? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. If they were coming from states that have seen a rapid increase in the numbers of cases, it might have been worse July 1 than June 1. The important thing to me, and more importantly to the medical community, is they're bringing in student athletes on a voluntary basis. They're testing them right away. They're identifying those that have COVID-19. They're doing isolation and quarantining, and they're providing them with really good medical care. That's the real test here. And I think the fact that schools are reacting pretty aggressively to all of this is a very encouraging sign. So you see LSU, a school that I know very well, of course. You know, they've got, apparently, I haven't talked to anybody there, but apparently they've got 30 students in quarantine. Well, I don't know what the caseload is there, but They've got them quarantined. They're taking care of them. They've got good medical attention there. So wherever it is, if the schools are handling this with good protocol and aggressively, then whether it was July 1, June 1, or August 1, I'm not sure that's the critical variable here.
So Mark, when these sports started to come back, one of the things that I kept saying was, we shouldn't have an expectation that there are going to be no cases of the virus. So it's not a question of whether we get positive cases. It's a question of how people react to that. Is that kind of your expectation that this virus is going to be present? There are going to be outbreaks. There are going to be positive cases. Or are you trying to tell your folks, look, we've got to get to a place where we can protect not only our athletes, but our coaches and trainers, whoever else is around, not to mention the student body at large, from getting it at all?
Yeah, I've been saying for some time now that you have to assume that there'll be students and student athletes in general, I mean, students in general, as well as the student athletes, who come down with the virus. The early cases around summer workouts are proving that. So the real question isn't, you know, what do you do if? It's what do you do when someone comes down with a case? How do you deal with it during summer workouts? It's obviously easier because you can contain the student athlete. You can quarantine them for an extended period of time. The real question, the real test to me is what's going to happen when you begin competition. When you're in physical, let's just stick with football. When you're in physical contact periods and you're practicing and you're then of course in game time, how are you going to handle a circumstance where I'm making this up, of course, an offensive lineman is tested positive and he's been in a game, and who else is in that contact tracing then for a football player, right? It's a whole lot of folks. And then what's the protocol going forward? Do all of those people that have been in contact with that player, and if it's an offensive lineman, it's pretty much the whole offensive line and maybe the D line they've been practicing against, do they all get quarantined for 14 days? You know, I think today that would be the protocol that most medical professionals would advise. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out pretty soon you don't have enough players to put a team on the field. So between now and game time, whenever games are beginning, those are protocols that have got to be developed and have got to be worked out. There's testing to make sure that you know what the condition of all of the athletes is. And then similarly, it's what do you do when some of them come down with it? It's again, relatively easy, or that much easier doing voluntary workouts versus practice versus games. Those are details that everybody's working on right now. What are the protocols? If you think about, Seth, for example, you know, players coming off the field, we're probably going to need protocols that say, look, they've got to have a face shield on, they've got to have a mask on before they go talk to a coach, before they interact with the rest of their team. You know, we're all accustomed to seeing the whole offense together, you know, in a huddle, talking to each other on the sidelines, or the O-line or the D-line talking to their coaches, you know, on the sidelines. Well, people have got to be protected during that time. You got to minimize the interactions with people that aren't necessarily on the field at that point in time. So it's got to look different. We've got to come up with protocol that protect student athletes to the fullest extent possible. But you can't assume that you can protect them completely. That's not doable. And so, what level of risk is acceptable? That's the equation here, as you figure out how to live with this virus, not eliminate it at this stage. And can you conduct games in a way that has an acceptable level of risk for everybody involved? That's the key question.
So college football is the big sport that's right in front of us, but not far behind that is college basketball. And with all of this talk about a potential second wave, there could be a major disruption in the college basketball season. How would you expect your schools and conferences to handle a potential second wave over the winter? And would it be your preference, Mark, simply to push back the college basketball season, have it start, you know, maybe January 2021 and go through May, something along those lines to anticipate that?
Yeah, it's obviously a critical question for all of the winter athletes in all of the sports. Basketball is the highest profile, of course. You know, we're looking at a whole array of scenarios around all of those issues. So one possibility, for example, and it's just a possibility, is to do the opposite, is to move the season forward, begin it in earlier in November, play some games, maybe even conference games before the Christmas holidays in anticipation that there may be some significant disruptions. Again, if you're thinking about this from a point of view of not if, but when someone comes down with a case. Basketball is a much more intimate game in the sense that you only have 13 scholarship players. If one or two student athletes come down with it, then you're probably quarantining a whole team, right? And so you may have to say, I'm making this up, but you may have to say, look, we're going to stop playing for 2 weeks. Well, if you started the season earlier and you've shortened the number of contests, you could afford to have some disruptions in the season and still get a full season in. So there's two theories here. One is let's compress it. One, the other is let's stretch it out and anticipate. We're looking at all of those scenarios because, again, this is uncharted territory. Nobody's ever done this before. And we're trying to keep the closest eye on what can we do to allow contests to occur in a way that keeps students as safe as possible. And if we can't do it, then we won't. But, you know, the assumption is we can and we'll move forward.
So I just want to touch on a couple of topics before we say goodbye, widen the lens a little bit. A lot going on in the world. Obviously, a lot of conversation around the issues of social justice and racial justice in the wake of the George Floyd killing. And one interesting thing that we're seeing, Mark, is college athletes becoming very strident and very vocal and really becoming quite aware of the power of their platform. You saw the situation at Oklahoma State with Mike Gundy. The issue in Mississippi, which I want to get to. But what's been your reaction seeing these athletes speaking up this way and using their platforms in this way?
Well, I can obviously only speak for myself on that issue. And as a lifelong campus guy who spent 40 years on university campuses, I find it incredibly welcome and I hope impactful. We've always known forever student athletes are highly visible individuals and have been for generations. I'm literally a child of the 60s, right? I actually remember the 60s and I remember the 68 Olympics, you know, and I remember all of the roles that athletes have played in helping drive change. And so I think this is a very important moment for our athletes. It's important for them to find their voice in all of this. I think it's really important for campuses, us as an association, campuses, conferences, to be supportive of them, to be helpful in any way that we can so that you don't have student athletes remembering that they're students, right? They don't get out there and then have somebody saw a limb off behind them. That's the worst thing that can happen here. So be helpful and supportive of them in that role. And when they see things that they think are inappropriate, regardless of where it is in society, including on their own campus, I think it's a great thing that they're participating just like any other student does.
And then finally, on Friday, the NCAA expanded a policy that was already on the books, basically to cover all sports and all championships to not be held in states that use inappropriate symbolism. In this case, clearly we're directing it at the Confederate flag. And the only state at this point that's affected by that is the state of Mississippi, which has the symbol of the Confederate flag within its state flag. So this was a reaffirmation and an expansion of NCAA's policy in this regard. Is it your hope, given all that has happened and given the extension and expansion of that policy, that the state of Mississippi will now, in fact, move to change its flag, remove the Confederate flag symbol, and allow the championships to be held in the state of Mississippi?
Yes, in a word. I mean, I have great respect for the schools in Mississippi. You know, having been an SEC chancellor, I've been on the campuses there. I know many of the leaders of their schools. They've got great Division I, II, and III schools in Mississippi, wonderful athletic traditions there. And we want the student athletes in that state to have every opportunity that all student athletes should get. But you can't tolerate in 2020, you shouldn't tolerate ever, but in 2020 to have to take that step was a very disturbing vote for the board to even have to have this debate, to be perfectly candid. You know, this is an issue that time has come and should have gone. And I hope personally that the state decides to remove the flag. We'd love to have championship events in Mississippi, but only if it can be done in a way that's respectful of everybody that participates in our games. And that was a strongly held unanimous view by the entire board, and it's certainly my position.
Finally, Mark, regrettably and predictably, because of the financial impact of COVID-19, we've seen many schools cutting sports programs. Fair to say that in the coming months, that will continue?
I'm deeply worried, frankly, about higher education in general. First of all, you know, again, as a former professor and president, I look at the economic status of a lot of schools right now, and they're really going to be struggling in the next 12 to 24 months, and maybe well beyond that. We're going to see, we already have seen, but we're going to see schools close, the entire school close. We're going to see and are seeing some schools, especially smaller schools, cancel entire sports seasons. And yeah, I'm afraid we are going to see some schools, as they struggle to keep their athletic department open, find no choice here but to eliminate athletic programs. We saw that during the Great Recession, and we're certainly going to see it this year. If we go into a year without revenue, which we're going to see no matter what, we're going to see reduced revenues pretty much across the board in college sports programs. They're going to be left with a very, very hard choices. You know, I promote, everybody wants to promote participation in sports and broad-based participation, but you can't expect schools to write bad checks. So yeah, I worry greatly about that. I worry that those cuts will be borne more on the Olympic sports because they're the so-called non-revenue sports. We all get that. But it's a problem today, and it's a potential much bigger problem going forward.
Mark, these are tough topics, tough times. We're doing our best to get through it. Appreciate your leadership. Appreciate you coming on the show. Hopefully we'll talk again in the future about happier things, but first things first. Thanks for being on the podcast today. Best of luck sorting through all this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, and maybe next time we can do it face to face.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
My thanks to Mark Embert for joining the show. I'm Seth Davis, and this is The Comeback presented by The Athletic. Be sure to follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you access your podcasts, as we track the major issues surrounding the return of sports. Thanks for listening, everybody.